of knowing.
All right, man. Welcome to Crow 777 Radio. This is episode 589. Jason Lindgren is with me, and Aaron Summer joins us for the first time. This is an interesting story, to say the least. We're going to talk with a woman who was pretty much bought into the mainstream up to a point. And when Covidius Minimus reared its fake ass head, they began to wake up and look around and search for a better way. And the story that follows is going to come to a natural birth, a child born with all the advantages in this world, a child that has a real chance in the coming era of massive change because they have not been shot up, poisoned, and any number of things that I could cover, not to mention one of the few children that are even going to be present because of the social engineering. Jason and I have covered it at least since the 1970s with the psychological operation that was the Women's Lib movement to convince women that they needed to act more like men, dress like men, be like men, to get paid like men. One of the side results of that, which was in the planning put forward by Gloria Steinem, who's an admitted CIA asset, you can look that clip up on YouTube if you don't believe me, was that women no longer began their families in their early 20s, and it pushed into the 30s, which typically reduced the number of children often to one. And this is only one aspect of the social engineering that still carries on today. You can look at almost any television program that's popular at any level, and they give the impression that having children is a hassle, it's inconvenient, any number of things. This is partially the problem with Japan, which will cease to exist probably in the lifetimes of some of us listening. It will no longer be a country as we have remembered it because their birth rate has been in negative numbers for more than one generation now. At any rate, welcome, Jason.
And a lovely good morning.
You ready to jump into this?
Oh, yes.
All right, Aaron, welcome. It is so awesome to have you here. You were a person who applied common sense after you realized that the mainstream system is full of prunes, to be polite about it.
Crow, Jason, and Rose, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's just such an honor and a privilege to be here. As we were discussing a little bit before we hit record, this show is really the catalyst for me not only learning that there's a way outside of the allopathic system or the system as a whole, but that motherhood was an option for me. I listened to some of the free birth episodes that you thought you had done. This was before I even thought I would be pregnant or giving birth to a child myself. And I thought, gosh, these stories are amazing and incredible. I didn't know it was an option. If I ever have the opportunity, this is the way I want to do it. And now here we are talking about it. It's, it makes me a little emotional.
Well, let me do a little run up here. One of the bullets we're going to get into is that you took part in what's called conscious conception on your 40th birthday. There's another thing that the mainstream is going to kick against, because apparently once you're 35 years old, it's dangerous to have children or any number of things that you will be told by the mainstream system to try to dissuade you from building a family. But what year was it, specifically, if you remember, when you finally realized that we've all been hoodwinked by the mainstream system that basically slaves us out most of our lives?
2 weeks into COVID.
What was it specifically that rang your bell?
You know, it was actually, bless my husband, Nelson. He was the first one who sort of said, something is amiss. This is over the top. It almost felt like it was a theatrical production being sold to us as a bill of goods. And, you know, he kept pointing things out to me. You know, he would send me articles and he'd say, read beyond the headline, actually read the content, read 5 paragraphs down, 9 paragraphs down. And that's where sort of the bulk of the truth really was. But people don't read these things. And we started to realize that something was amiss. And then, of course, I don't know how I found this show in particular, but it was one of the very first things that we both came across. And then it was just like, wow, people talk about jumping down the rabbit hole. We were free diving down the endless rabbit hole. And it was just the most exhilarating education of our lives, because here I am 4 years later. That was early to mid 2020. Here we are. And life is completely different now. We're different people now.
Do you remember what the first episode from Crow 777 Radio was that you were exposed to?
Well, Amanda Vollmer was the reason, actually, when I come to think of it, that I found your show, because I think I discovered her work first and I was interested in hearing her interviews. And she's a local, you know, I've not met her in person, of course, but she is sort of local to me. I'm in Ontario, Canada, and so is she. And found her work, as particularly Terrain Theory, really compelling. And I wanted to learn more. And then, of course, the content that you produce is just so incredible that I dove in. I started from the very beginning after listening to the few episodes you had done with Amanda.
The responsibility of what we do here comes home when you begin to realize how many lives we've touched. Amanda Vollmer met her significant other through this broadcast. And we bump into people in the weirdest ways that have had such astounding effects on their life in one way or another, through the people or through the episodes. But when you found the Amanda Vollmer show, did you dive back in and just choose the episodes that you were going to digest carefully, or how did you do it?
Well, I started by listening to the all the episodes that she had recorded with you, and you had a good amount. You had maybe four. And then I was interested at the time in sort of holistic, homeopathic. So I listened to a lot of those topics. But then I actually started right from the beginning and listening to your earlier episodes. I've listened to every single episode that you've put out since. And so that's an education.
Did you go back to one?
Yes.
Oh, wow. that's a lot of coverage.
If I've listened to them all in full, perhaps not, but I've definitely touched on all of them. I just, you know, I had a lot of free time on my hand. I work from home. I have worked from home. And so I was just consuming content 24/7. My husband and I were consuming content like it was our full-time job. And we both recognize that not everybody actually has that time or capacity to do these things. So we feel really privileged to have learned so much in such a short period of time.
That's quite a story. You know, it's funny. I don't know, it was 2 months ago. For some reason, I'd gone back. The episodes we did early on were a lot more in your face, I think, than they kind of are now. But once you've kicked a can so many times, you kind of have to move on. But let's jump in here. We'll start at the top of the bullets that we've outlined for the experience. But basically, the tale that's going to be told here is you were a woman approaching 40 who had no intention of having children. During the course of separating your mind from the false mainstream system, particularly that emerged around 2020, open in the daylight, doesn't care if you're looking, you changed your mind and you decided to have a family. And the story that follows is your experience with bringing a life into this world with all the advantages, all the God-given advantages that can be possibly bestowed on a new life by not going into the chemically induced system that is designed to handicap us all.
Yes, that's 100% the way it was. My husband and I have been together for years now. You know, we've been together for 14, but we both met quite young. I was 19, he was 22. We had this magnetic attraction to each other. We always stayed in each other's lives. And when we got back together for good at 14 years ago, he was very serious about not wanting children. And I had been on the fence about it, but our relationship was of utmost priority to me. And I was willing to say okay to that idea. And, you know, but he had this idea that this was not the type of world that you want to bring a child into. It's chaotic. It can be violent. And that he didn't want to leave our child abandoned in this world to struggle. And he felt very strongly about that. And then, of course, during the scamdemic, doing all this research and realizing how we've been manipulated into self-annihilation, I begin to feel very strongly about wanting to be a mother. And we had had several conversations and he had been quite adamant his mind wasn't going to change. So I didn't actually know that this was going to happen. But, you know, I have to just sidebar to say that when I was midway through my 39th year, I was feeling an existential crisis, or, you know, I was feeling very depressed about 40, not because of the age 40. It was more about what was I producing of significance? Who were my community? Our friends, you know, many of them had abandoned us or, you know, weren't taking us seriously. The vaccine, of course, being a topic that just divided so many people, were, you know, considered loony, tinfoil hat wearers for refusing to take it. I just felt lonely and no direction. And I had listened to the episodes you've done with Athan Kementi and loved them. So I had a reading with him, and he told me that I had started down a path in my 20s that I was going to revisit probably around this time. And honestly, that awakened a memory in me of passions I had when I was younger. You know, I was really into things like Reiki and hands-on healing and manifestation. And I sort of dove back into that world head first. He reminded me that. And I really wrote down a list of the things that I really, really wanted, true things that came from the heart. And a child was one of them. And I started having dreams that I was going to have a son. And these dreams were so real. They felt so true that I started to believe in my heart that it was going to happen.
There's the new path emerging. There is the new path emerging. And one of the ways it emerges for those who have separated themselves from the false kind of whatever you want to call it that has been built up around us. And I want to steer us into the conversation here, Jason, if you're ready, but I want to just say one thing. I don't know, 2 weeks ago, I sent a text to my best friend that I grew up with. This is a man who has zero body fat, kept up on karate. If you would have asked any of the 10 or so of us that grew up in a gang who would live the longest, he would have been it. Sent him a text, didn't hear anything for a couple of days, which isn't totally uncommon. He's a busy man. And then I got a text from his wife saying, call me. And that's when I got the wind knocked out of me. He's dead. He died of a heart attack sitting at his place of business in the year that he was going to retire. And my first question was, did he get the shot? And she said he got two. And this is the 14th person that I know personally from firsthand experience that died of a stroke, a blood clot, or a heart attack that had the shot. I am told by people who are in the know that every single inoculation now has the, I don't know, what is it, the mRNA, whatever it is, it's the COVIDious nonsensicus crap put into all of the stuff they're pushing, which I think everybody needs to keep this in mind. But anyhow, Jason, I kind of feel like we covered the first two bullet points. You want, what do you say? Do we pick up on three here?
All right, so I guess that brings us to the conscious conception on your 40th birthday before you knew conscious conception was even a thing.
Yes. Well, it's funny because it was conscious for me and it was conscious for my husband, but we both didn't know that the other was thinking these things. I had been on birth control for 20 years. I stopped taking it in 2020. I discarded all the medications that I had been taking as part of the wake up. So my husband knew about this, of course, and I had always known an accident could happen, but it was always very important to me to know that my husband was on the same page. I was never going to get one past him and oopsies or whatnot. We had an open dialogue. So I had said to him midway through my age 39, like, please, please, if there's any wiggle room in your heart, will you consider it? And on the night of my 40th birthday, we had a wonderful time together. And then we were intimate. And he said he just had this feeling. He says, God told me to just give it a shot and let's see what happens. And it was just that one take. And that was the night I conceived.
Do you feel like you were aware of the moment?
Yes. Yes. The whole experience, there was this energy. There was this energy in the room. It was when we were finished and we were lying together, I just felt like everything had changed. I don't know if he would agree if he felt the same way, but he said something, he felt it wasn't just him.
For everybody listening, Zoom crashed out for the first time. This actually never happened. I mean, it shut down and then relaunched. I had to kill the session and log in. So Aaron, you were in the midst of talking about the conscious conception and I had asked you, do you feel like you were aware of the moment? And I was also going to ask you, if you are aware of that moment, have you recorded the time and date? Because you did talk with Athan, and that time and date become very critical if you choose to further that path. And lastly, before you jump in, Athan accurately predicted more than, I think, 8 months in advance the day the vaccine was going to drop. It was December 14. I remember it well. Anyhow, so if you can try to kind of pick up where you were within the conscious conception.
Right. My birthday is January 28th. Actually, it's the day before Athan, I discovered. It was in the evening. I didn't actually record the exact time, but funny enough, I had an experience in which I feel that implantation took place. And that was a very profound experience. And I recorded that time exactly because it actually woke me in the middle of the night.
Oh, so wow.
There was this very interesting window where both my husband and I on my birthday had the same idea. I was hoping, I was praying that this was going to happen. And he was coming with that intention. Neither of us really knew, but we both came together and created this life. And so it was sometime in the evening of January 28th, probably around 9 p.m. But the implantation experience I had was on February the 6th.
Did you record the time nearest you can? It's good to have the date, but I think there was a time in this world when conscious conception was recorded along with other data, you know, when the life takes the first breath, these types of things for the purposes of consulting someone like Athan.
Absolutely. Well, on February 6th, I was woken. Sorry, it was the early morning of February 7th. It was around 2:32. I recorded it because it startled me. And I knew in that moment exactly what it was. I felt as though I was poked in the abdomen. For lack of a better description, it felt like I was poked by a finger, like a giant finger in my abdomen. And I had this vibration that just rippled out from my middle, from my head to my toes. It was this full body experience. And in that moment, I knew exactly what had happened. And I was exhilarated. It was just the most incredible sensation. I thought about it for days afterwards. And I actually did take a pregnancy test 2 days afterwards because I knew, and it was still too early to detect. It wasn't until the 11th of February that it actually came up as positive on the test.
Did you have a sense of gender or anything?
Yes, I knew that it would be a son because I had dreams. I saw his face, and these dreams, my dreams don't make sense. My dreams are chaotic.
I hear that.
I got to ask you a question then, because from talking with you, I can kind of tell that you're on the divergent path. Did you at any time tell the universe that you were done with the old way of doing things and that you would not be subject to it? I mean, did you seriously do that?
I said every single day, and I still do, like, I hope that you can sense the change in my heart. I hope you know that I've really changed. It's not surface level. My heart has changed. Everything has changed.
One of the biggest things, and I want to ask you, I did it decades ago. Well, I've done it my whole life, but I formally did it many decades ago. And the first thing that I noticed, and I've always considered it's in conjunction with just refusing to believe stuff anymore, is the intuition starts to skyrocket. Have you experienced that?
Yes. And I think for a while, maybe I even rebelled against it a little bit. But now that I've leaned into it, it's the most powerful experience in my life. My husband jokingly calls me a witch. You know, he says it, he means it. It's a term of endearment because things just happen. The most amazing things when they come from my heart space, magic happens. This world is incredible to me. I am so grateful. Even though it sometimes seems like the world around us is burning, my life is full of meaning and passion, and I feel the deep sense of connection with my creator, and it's the most fulfilling thing in the world.
If I asked you about the small, still voice, would it mean anything to you?
I think so, but sometimes also too, it's my own voice. So I'm like,
that is the voice. It is. That is the voice. It's the one we've been ignoring our whole life. So we don't know that it's there.
Yes. And that is what Athan reminded me of. It is something I don't know how do you set upon such a powerful path and then abandon and forget it? I don't know, but I'm so grateful for him for just sort of guiding me back. And that's because you gave him a platform. So thank you.
He's got a good heart. So
he does.
He did what he needs to do, and he's good at what he does.
Yes.
Very good at what he does. So anyhow, Jason, I feel like we're picking up on four, but I'll just do it. So you're coming into both you and your husband decide on your 40th birthday that you're going to conceive, and you do. So what had you been, actually, I hadn't even asked, did you have any interaction with the mainstream, like people telling you you're too old and the world might end if you had a baby at age 40?
Yes. So I haven't taken any drugs, have had no scans, you know, no checkups per se. I did have a meeting with the local midwives. Right at the beginning, when I knew that I was pregnant, I didn't know where to turn. I knew that I wanted to birth outside of the system, but I also felt like I needed support. I knew that there are these communities like free birthing communities, but I felt like I needed a middle road. I wasn't really prepared to just birth alone and with my husband. I wanted some support. So I had actually reached out to the local midwives, and they at the time were fully booked. And I saw that as a sign, even more of a sign that I didn't need them. But I have an Rh negative blood type. I'm an O negative. And my husband has a positive blood type. And it's my understanding that there can be complications.
That's true. That is true.
That was the only thing that I worried about. That was the only unclear thing that I sort of wanted to have just a second opinion on, so to speak. So actually, the midwives did come back to me and they had some openings come up. And I don't know how that happens, if, you know, unfortunate circumstances arise with their with other clients or whatnot. But I did meet with them and I explained to them that I wanted to investigate this a little bit further. I'd read some literature on Rh negative pregnancies. It's very strange. There's just very little information out there on Rh negative.
That's a fact. The whole blood typing. Me and Jason will talk about that in a minute. It's ridiculously absent.
It really is. And it leaves this weird gray area where people fill it in with lore and superstition. So I felt like I had a lot of unhelpful information. But I did end up reading a pretty good no-nonsense book by Dr. Sarah Wickham. It's about our blood types, you know, because they want you to take the Rogam shot. It's a blood product made from the plasma of 100 plus donors. It's this weird blood mix that I did not want to take.
Let me interject for a second. Of the people that I know who are in the know, that shot apparently works, by the way. It can stop the fetus from being killed or fought off as if it was an intruder.
Yes.
If the Rh factors don't match. But here's the rub. Since 2020, I have been informed that the complete blood supply is absolutely tainted, and that people who have a worry should bank their own blood, which I guess is possible. I've not looked into it, but if you take blood from the system and it is becoming more prevalent that blood supply has been tainted from the vaccines, you can inherit, or actually ingest, maybe is a better way to say it, that vaccine through the blood supply, just to make the point. Anyhow, back over to you.
Well, that was my exact worry. I don't want to take a mystery blood product now that all of these COVID vaccines, that all of this stuff is just, I did not want it. I did not want this. Now, it is also my understanding that the first child is usually okay. It's actually once moving forward. It's when the mother's blood becomes sensitized with the first possibly in the womb. But anyways, to sidestep that, there is a test. Here in Canada and in the US, it's not typical, but in the UK, they do a non-invasive blood typing test of every Rh negative mother to test the blood typing of the baby. And if the baby is also a negative like the mother, there's no need to take the Rogam shot.
Okay, so wait a minute. Let me get this straight. What you're saying, the mother is Rh negative. So there is no Rh factor. The right. baby, which is not born yet, is also Rh negative. The yeah. father is Rh positive. So there is an Rh factor. So what you are saying is if both the mother and the unborn child are negative, then there's no worry from the positively factored father.
Exactly. And it's my understanding that it's sort of 60-40, the chances that the baby is going to be a positive, like the father is more in like the 60 percentile. Whereas if it's the negative, like the mother, it's more likely to be about 40%. But they can, there's the blood test in the UK that will determine that. And if the baby has the blood type that matches the mother, there's no need for the Rogaine shot.
So let's explain to everybody so they get it. And Jason, you might want to jump in here. Basically, Jason and I decided to go with the blood thing because it's a big deal. And immediately what we found is everybody's lying. And not only are they lying, but it almost seems like whatever part of the world and whatever race created the data, they try to claim their race is the first one on the continent or all these ridiculous things separated from science. We then began to realize that the typing of blood is completely messed up. And you can find this in episode 74 and 187 about the Rh negative episodes. But I happened by chance to find a small book about a male nurse back in the 60s who recognized the typing problem. And there's more types of blood than you can imagine. But here's what we're talking about. Rh positive dad impregnates Rh negative mom. Baby is Rh positive like the father. Rh negative mom's body can view the baby as an intruder. I'm not even kidding. And mom's immune system kills the baby, not recognizing it as a human being. Now, Jason, if I was going to ask you, of all the things that we learned when we were trying to get to the very confusing bottom of Rh negative, in your mind now, does the Rh factor signify anything that matters?
Well, we did keep coming across that it was the blue bloods, that it was the more elite families that had the Rh negative factor.
Yep. Which our guest here, Erin, is, as a matter of fact, not just the negative factor, she is also O. And that speaks to her intuition and a few other things. I think it has to do with, well, have you ever been sick? Have you ever had the flu in your life, Erin?
Yes.
Have you had it many times?
Yeah, maybe. And it hasn't been terribly serious.
Typically, they say a lot of Rh negative people don't tend to get sick as much. But here's the rub. What I came away with on the Rh is it proves that we don't all come from the same source. And it also seems to prove that the Rh positive among us seem to have a very hidden source. Whereas the Rh negative, as Jason pointed out, tend to be where the ruling classes have come from in the past. I can point to any number of things. There's a Big Bang episode where Doc Martin from Back to the Future shows up announcing he's O negative. I think there's a rock band or a metal band. Their name is O negative. But anyhow, I wanted to get it on the table so people get why we're even talking about it. So back over to you, Erin. Your child is the same factor as you. So you are now of a mind that there's no danger that your body will fight the fetus off as an invader.
Well, actually, no, I didn't find out his blood typing until he was born. My birth attendant, whom I'll tell you about in a little bit, she tested the cord blood with just the smear test. And he actually is the same blood type as my husband. So he's a B positive. But the reason I decide to engage with the system midwives, who are licensed and regulated by Ontario, they don't function independently. So it's really no different than going to your hospital. But I asked them, I said, I know that in the UK, this standard blood test happens. It's non-invasive. It's just a blood sample taken from the mother. They can test the blood somehow of the unborn fetus and they'll know the type. And if my baby had been negative, I would have had, peace of mind that I didn't have to take the Rogam shot. But I told the midwives this, they'd never heard of this. They thought it was kind of ridiculous. They were like, why do you not just want to take the Rogam shot? And I said, I feel very strongly I don't want to take it. So actually, the midwife who I spoke with, she was reasonable. And she set up on trying to get this test for me. And everywhere she went, she was turned down. And then our hospital in Toronto, which is about 2 hours south of where I am now, they agreed to do the test for me, but I had to have an ultrasound to prove viability of the child. And my husband's blood type also had to be tested just to confirm that, you know, he's the father or not. And it was just so insulting and so ridiculous. I just decided, you know what? I don't need these people. I'm trusting. I have faith that this is going to work out. The pregnancy happened immediately. I just knew. I decided to go with my gut and my intuition and trust the process.
So you basically turned down the Rogam shot, not knowing whether your newborn child was negative or positive. And by the way, just so everybody knows, RH stands for rhesus. And that is taken from the rhesus macaque monkeys.
Yes.
You know, the ones where they have temples in India to the rhesus macaque monkey, where there's a god named Hanuman or whatever it is. Just pointing the obvious here.
Yeah, exactly that. So I thought, well, this is my first child. The first child is the one who's not typically at risk. And I didn't know if there would be another one, but I thought I am going to take this chance. I trust the process. I felt like everything was going well. My pregnancy was great. I felt amazing.
What did the mid, were you getting pressure from the system when you made these choices?
Well, yeah, to a degree. But at the same time, I also felt like I piqued the interest of the midwife that I was speaking with. And funny enough, she started looking into things, and she had called me once on her own spare time and left me a message about, because I was also, I didn't want ultrasound. And I told her about a book I had read, 50 Human Studies by Jim West, about the dangers of diagnostic ultrasound. And I don't think she had ever heard of it before. And so she was kind of diving down that rabbit hole. And interestingly enough, I had been assigned a team of midwives right off the bat, and they switched my team shortly thereafter. So I don't know if it was because...
After the RH...
Yes, after she tried to petition for me to get this blood test typing done, and after I also told her I declined all the tests, all the blood work, all the ultrasounds, they decided to switch the midwife team that would be facilitating my birth. But it was fine. I left them. I wasn't planning to use them anyways.
As the pregnancy went on, did you continue with the midwiving? Who was actually involved from this point forward up to the birthing time? Are there midwives, doulas, or are you doing it?
I discovered a community of women who call themselves traditional birth attendants or traditional birth companions. And they attend births. And the one that I worked with personally, her name is Ina. Her name is Ina. She's still with us. She was an absolute godsend to me. She embodied mother, midwife, medicine woman, wise woman, caretaker. She was all of these things for me. I discovered her at the tail end of my first trimester, and she's sort of local to me. You know, you have to sort of go digging on the internet to find these people. It was actually through a Telegram group that Amanda Vollmer had set up that I sort of put out feelers for people who could maybe attend my birth. I was actually looking for private midwives, but those aren't a thing here. You can't function privately here as a midwife. So these traditional birth attendants will attend birth and will be there for you. And they don't deliver the child, but they arm you with all of the knowledge leading up to the birth, and they attend the birth, and they are there. And then they come to visit you afterwards. And it was exactly what I wanted. It was that perfect middle ground between not having the support of the allopathic system and also not just free birthing alone in a meadow is how I joke.
Well, in our era, what you did is extremely brave compared to what's going on around, but that is some old school awesomeness. And if I dare say Providence and not the one in Rhode Island, that's incredible.
Yeah, well, I can't speak more highly about these women who call themselves traditional birth attendants because they have all this knowledge and they have the knowledge of midwives. They have the knowledge of doulas, but it's so much more than that. And their presence is just like, it's very comforting, reassuring. Ina, my birth attendant, facilitated the most beautiful, calm, empowering birth. All of the things that would scare women who were birthing in the allopathic system are the things that Ina was excited about. Yes, this is great. Things not being sterile and clinical, letting the bacteria being present and tears and mucus. And she thought these things were a beautiful thing that set up the gut biome and a bonding experience between the baby and the mother and the father. It was just such a beautiful thing. Whereas in the system, like you had said, because I'm over the age of 35, even the midwives whom I consulted with briefly did say, you know, you are a geriatric pregnancy.
Oh my.
I've never felt better.
Geriatric, huh? Yeah, there's a definition to look up, maybe. I'm just saying geriatric at age 40.
Well, I was determined not to be a geriatric pregnant woman. And I felt amazing during my pregnancy.
So are you guys planning on having more children?
Well, we had said no, but now I don't know. We're in this funny, my husband Nelson's like, well, I mean, maybe, probably not, but maybe. And I'm also like, probably not, but I'm not completely closing the door to it. But this is where that blood factor sort of comes into play. It would be maybe perhaps a little bit riskier for me to proceed with a second pregnancy without considering taking the Rogam shot. So I don't know. I'm very happy. I have to say one child is so much more than zero. And my son, Wyatt, is the most incredible. He's perfect. You know,
How old is he now?
He is 7.5 months old. He's the epitome of health. He's also just so incredible. You wouldn't believe the things that he's doing right now. Everyone's in awe of him.
Does he get ear infections or colds or any of that stuff that we typically hear about with young lives?
Absolutely not. He's never been sick. He's never had any issues. He's currently teething. His top two are peeking through the gums as we speak. And he's been such a champion. He's a little fussy, but he is amazing. He's been crawling since 6 months old. He pulls himself up and stands on his own. He understands commands. He knows how to wave and give high fives and fist bumps. And he likes to read books, flip through books on his own. People just can't believe it. You know, and I can't believe it too, because it's almost as though this period of him being a baby is actually just flying by a little too fast. He's so incredible.
Can you imagine a world a few hundred years ago when every baby had those advantages?
It breaks my heart to a degree. You know, I think to myself, is he outstanding and remarkable? And it's just him, or are all babies coming into this world with this potential? And then all of this, there's all of these interventions that come in and stifle that.
Well, not poisoning them is a big deal. Everybody we talk to who doesn't shoot the kids up with all the crap and follow the mainstream quote-unquote guidelines, they're seeing so much better results than people on average who do follow the mainstream.
Yeah, exactly. And unfortunately, so many people who, you know, I have had long-standing relationships with, they don't really want to hear it. It's like he's doing well despite the fact that I haven't shot him up, or you know, I constantly ask, like, what does the doctor say? My son has never been to the doctor. He's fine. But that really is worrisome to some people in our lives.
Did you think about the birth certificate? Was the country of Canada pressing you with regard to the birth certificate? Did you give it any thought? What did you do in this regard?
Well, this is kind of a funny gray area because the government of Ontario doesn't know we've had a child. So the process for birthing at home, which is what we did, you have to submit a statement of live birth, and then you have to have witnesses who can vouch for you. And my birth attendant, Ina, who's very awake, she knows all the ins and outs. She knows the way the system works, the world works. She advised that she sent me the long form. She said, I do believe that you should pursue having the birth certificate done because you're not prepared to navigate this system the way it's set up now. She said, sort of come at it from an eyes wide open perspective, which I do agree with to a sense because I'm not very well versed in law. I'm not sure how best to protect him or raise him outside of the system. But that being said, I have not fulfilled any paperwork. He is not in the system. I've been hesitant to do it. And not only that, but the criteria for his witnesses, he has to have two physicians. And he's never seen a physician.
I just want to point out that is to indoctrinate him into the trust system.
Yes.
The problem, I mean, I wish I could offer you more because we've covered this a lot, but Canada is much different than here. But I would point out that anywhere in the world, you have your God-given rights. And if you come from a perspective of how do I retain the God-given rights of this new life, and I would also point out, I think the closest Jason and I have come is England, and people opted to use a passport as the form of ID.
Well, that is definitely something that we're having ongoing discussions about. It's funny, they say the government says you need to register them within 30 days of birth. But if you don't, there's no consequence.
Look up what a registration is just so people know. In this country where I live, if a child was never registered, could there ever be a time when the state comes and snatches the kid? I would point out. It's like your car, right? Everyone thinks they own their car, but they really don't. They've registered it. So you take care of it. You have it in your possession. You use it. But when you look up and realize what registration and certification are, and I'm just pointing it out because I don't think we use that language here. We refer to the birth certificate, but Jason, I don't think we say register the child here, do we?
Well, a lot of times it's done, we never even talk about it. It's just done in the hospital when the child is born. I never even thought about the term.
Right. And it's not really even a question because it's almost rote. When my nephews were born, the oldest one from the time he was born to the 2 years later when his next youngest brother was born, already in that time in the 90s, they had streamlined that you're not leaving this room without a social security number and all these documents filed out. When the oldest was born, it wasn't quite there yet. So in the 90s, it had changed. And the only reason I'm bringing this up is because you should be aware of what it means to register a thing or to certify a thing, just so that you know.
Absolutely. I actually don't want to. I don't want to at all. I know exactly what we would be getting ourselves into. My husband does too. The fear is in the conversation that we have is what it would be like to navigate, you know, the world, what kind of heat would we be bringing to us? Because we just really don't know. As you know, like things are very weird here as they are in the US as well. But
more so because you're a crown country.
Yes, exactly. Just concerned about the unknowns. And I know I don't want to live and raise him being fear-based. There's just a lot of questions. And my main concern is like, I don't know the law as well as I should. I don't know what could happen. The fear that there could be intervention from the government, et cetera, it's worrisome. And I've learned all of this great stuff in the past 4 years, but I'm a recovering people pleaser and pushover. And it's hard to learn how to stand your ground. And being a mother has really I have a lot to consider. And if I could, I will keep him out of the system completely.
I guess I'd recommend to you that you do what you did previously with your newfound path, your increased intuition, that you try to meet some people. The only problem is in this realm of citizenship, there's a lot of ideas flying around. And unfortunately, a lot of them are not the most helpful. But if you bring common sense to the game, I think you should meet someone who's experienced with the Canadian way of doing things. And by the way, I do know that these ideas that we're speaking of have become much more popular since 2020 up north of us because of all the things that have happened.
This is very true. I do want to shout out my naturopathic / homeopathic / German New Medicine doctor, Dr. Pete, whom I also met online. And he also really was encouraging me to stay outside of the system and actually had said he could connect me with some people who could educate me better on it. So I should probably take him up on that. I've been lost in this bubble of having this wonderful experience with baby and ignoring the rest of the world. Yeah, it's wonderful.
And yeah, maybe, you know, just probably look into the passport thing as a primary form of identification.
Yeah, I absolutely will do that. I will not do anything haphazardly. Everything I'm doing is filled with intention, so much so that sometimes I just say, yeah, you know what? I'll deal with this later.
All right. Erin, do you have websites or anything else or contacts that you would like to make people aware of? And be aware that you're in hour one, so you're talking to everybody.
Okay, that's no problem. I have nothing to offer that is in this vein. However, if anyone would like to email me, I just set up a new email. It's Erin, E-R-I-N, and Wyatt, W-Y-A-T-T, at protonmail.com. And you can reach me there. And that's for anyone who's listening to this show.
All right. So please be sure that any links you want to go in with the episode that want to show up in the first comment, make sure Rose has those. That email would be one of those things. We're going to wrap up hour one of episode 589 here. Erin, what you're doing here is brave, and it is truly brave because I grew up in a weird time. Like, I'm not really a boomer, and I guess I'm not fully a Gen X. I'm literally on the cusp. So I lived and remembered a little bit of both, maybe a little more Gen X than boomer, but I was there for both. And people were harder, tougher, braver in those times than they are now. So to see people step up and do what you're doing, in fact, in my book, is definitely a form of bravery. But what I notice is once the people I talk to that have done things like this, the world gets a lot easier because the fear kind of dissipates as you begin to realize that the system that we all thought we needed is really not as helpful as we once thought it was.
Yeah, 100%. It's so empowering. To recognize that these systems that I used to trust so much, they're not here to serve me in any positive way. To be able to let it go is the most incredible experience, honestly. To know that to stand in my own power and my intuition is the best call. Wow, what a life-changing state of mind.
It may seem weird to folks now, but there was actually a time in this world not too long ago, because I can remember it, when people did things for themselves, and the system that has come up around us has slowly, steadily gotten people to surrender just about everything along with their rights. But anyhow, that is the end of hour one of episode 589 with Erin Summer and Jason Lindgren covering her completely mainstream system-free natural birth, the advantages that she gave to her new son. Hour one is free to everybody at crow777radio.com. That is crow777radio.com. Members know to log in for the full episode, which usually is 2 hours, 2 hours plus. They get access to all the forums. They can create forums, all the comment sections, and they can stream Shoot the Moon, the 2-hour film that covers all my prior telescope work. It has 10 awards in the world now. And membership gets sole access to the new telescope I'm doing with my hydrogen alpha scope. It is my view that the sun will be a massive deal as we change eras. With that, we're going to wrap up, take a short break, come back for hour two, and I'd like to wish you all a happy healthy, and higher-minded new era. There it is, man. Cheers.
Belief is the enemy of knowing.